This has been really very interesting times, to put it mildly. I don't even know how to put it in words. We've had so many questions about how to career change during uncertain times. Interestingly enough, we've had in equal parts both people saying, oh my goodness, is this even going to be a good time anymore? And then just as many people saying, okay, well, I must make this happen during this time. So how do I make this happen during this time? So we've had questions coming from a variety of different angles. We were struggling to getting back so many of these questions that were coming into our inboxes and many other channels. And we really wanted to do something where we could answer these questions for more people. So that's how this came about. And we felt like it would be able to help you understand what's really going on, how to navigate through this, what should you be concerned about, what shouldn't you be concerned about, and how can you make many of these things that you want within your life, within your career, happen for you during these times.
This is the Happen to Your Career podcast with Scott Anthony Barlow.
We help you stop doing work that doesn't fit you, figure out what does, and make it happen.
We help you define the work that's unapologetically you, and then go get it.
If you're ready to make a change, keep listening.
Here's Scott.
Here's Scott.
Here's Scott.
Welcome to How to Keep Career Change Doing During Uncertain Times. And we're going to cover off many of the most common questions that we're getting over and over and over again as people are going about their job search, whether they're in middle stages, end stages, or even just getting started, or even thinking about starting, whether they're making a full-on career change or just simply a company change in between. So really excited to be here. I have with me Philip from our team. Philip is our Director of Student and Client Success. If you haven't already interacted with him, Philip is one of the first people that you talk to when you decide that you want our help in any capacity. And often, you know, people have a conversation with him, and he does a great job asking really amazing questions to help people figure out what they want and need and the right types of support. So Philip, thank you for being here. He's also helped us create several of our programs too, and he's a great resource on his own just for these types of things that we're going to talk about here, all things career change. He's also making sure that everything runs smoothly on the technical side as well. Normally, we have other people on the team like Josh here. Josh is actually tied up trying to take care of all the other questions, among other things, and content that we have coming through the pike to be able to help out during some of these uncertain times. So I want this to be driven by what you need most. And one of the things that I will do, if you want it, is share with you some of the most successful ways that we've helped people make career change, whether it's during uncertain times or otherwise. And I'll be happy to do that towards the end of the session, but only if you want it. And at the same time, long before we get there, I want to try and answer as many of these questions as we possibly can. So let's go. Drop your questions in the chat. Drop your comments in the chat. And one thing I do want to know, so I can tailor it as we're going along, just really quickly here in the chat, are you trying to career change right now or make a job change in any way, any type of career change, small or large, right now or the number of months in the future that in which you anticipate? Just so I can get an idea of where everybody's at. Jason says right now. Shannon says job change by June 1st. Now by late summer. Looking to turn into summer, fall right now. Okay, so most people are on the sooner side, originally looking 6 to 12 months, may push it up. So this is perfect by summer. Anybody who wants to make a change before fall, I would encourage you to really start now, sooner rather than later. We're going to talk about some of the reasons why as we go along, just through the natural course of some of these questions. And I think that there's a huge opportunity here where so many people are waiting, sitting back and waiting to see what happens. So we'll talk about that. Let's jump right into some of these questions that we've had here. We've been getting some variation again and again and again of, hey, I'm being told companies are freezing hiring right now. So we have this question that is not just from Meg, but it's also from about, I don't even know how many other people sent some variation. And this might be your question too. You know, are companies freezing hiring right now? So the answer is yes, absolutely. There are companies out there freezing hiring. I've encountered quite a few of them. I reached out to a few people in my network that have a direct pulse on what many different organizations are doing, because they work with a huge variety of organizations, just to understand what they're seeing on a percentage basis. As near as I can tell, roughly half of organizations, and keep in mind, this is on a smaller sample size, but roughly half of organizations have some kind of hiring freeze going on. Also, at the exact same time, there are organizations that are scaling up like crazy. Not just a few organizations, but a lot of organizations. I honestly did not anticipate that, you know, if you would ask me 3 weeks ago when we were first talking about this with our team, I did not anticipate that we would be essentially overrun. Like, we're trying to figure out, like, how are we going to help all of the people that are inquiring right now and need our help because we don't have enough capacity, or we anticipate running out of capacity really, really quickly here. So there are a lot of organizations that are in the same type of boat. Interestingly enough, almost everyone is waiting to see what happens. That means that we've got a bunch of organizations that are scaling up. We have some that have been put on hiring freeze, and we have almost nobody who is actively job searching right now. I believe creates opportunity. We can talk about what kind of opportunity that creates later on for each of you. And we can talk about whether or not that's right for you. So we'll come back to more of that. But here's the thing that I want to share with you. I was actually scanning through my LinkedIn the last couple of days. I can't tell you how many new positions people have put on that have just recently, in the last, like this week, got new positions. And same thing, I just had a conversation with someone who is interviewing locally, and they're still moving through the process, even though they're locally and like the company they're working with is right down the road. They're moving forward in the final stages of the interview process, and they're doing it over video. Actually, they might have said phone. I can't quite remember, but either way, they're doing it remotely. So there are plenty of organizations out there that are still moving forward. And here's what I know to be true. And we can talk about some of the, actually was just on another show earlier this afternoon where it came on to talk specifically about this topic. What I anticipate happening is for the next 2 to 3 months, a lot of people are going to be waiting, not doing anything about their job search or their career change and continuing to wait. And then what I suspect is going to happen is there's going to be a whole flood of people that between 3 and 6 months out that decide, I can't wait any longer, and all begin to look and really take active action at that point in time. So that's part of what I mean by creating opportunity. We'll come back to that. So yes, some organizations are frozen. That's not everybody. And there are still plenty of hiring processes that are moving forward. And that will absolutely move up and down over the course of the next month. I fully anticipate that will be a thing. Let's go on to the next question here, because I think we're going to roll right into that as well. So this is a great question. And not too far away from that, we had a huge amount of people ask, hey, if I'm actually changing occupations, is what they meant by changing careers in this sense. We don't necessarily in our company, we don't necessarily in our organization look at a career change to mean solely changing occupations, but I know some people do. Their meaning is, hey, do I stick with these areas that I already know, or do I totally make a change? Is it okay to do that? So here's what I would tell you. I believe firmly in everything that we do and everything that we teach of people that you should go after what is most important to you. I know that sounds like a really simple thing to say right now. However, I believe that is especially true in these times. So I don't think that you should respond to what the economy is doing. Here's why. I know that, is anybody here looking for more than one job? Just drop in the chat, like, how many jobs are you looking for? Are you looking for one or two or several? Oh, two, one, two. Are anybody looking for more than two jobs? Open to several jobs? Okay. I have a number of people that are, but if you only need one or two jobs, like there are plenty of one or two jobs that are out there and available. And if you're going to what the averages are or what you're worried about the economy or market doing, then you're going to be stuck with getting the same results that, you know, all of those averages are indicating. But the reality is you only need, you know, one or a couple situations or opportunities that are with the right organization for you. And I'm going to guess that the right organization for you is probably an organization that is on their way up anyways. If an organization is in rapid decline, I'm guessing that it's probably not going to be right for you. We have a tendency to have, as listeners of our podcast and readers of our blog and our emails, you know, people that are very smart and very talented and are not interested in being on a sinking ship in many different ways. So guess what? The types of organizations that are most likely to have the types of roles that you want are going to be the most likely that are going to be in a position to hire you anyways. So you should absolutely not stop searching. And more importantly, to answer Sabrina's question directly and many other people's question directly, I don't see any reason for you to worry about, do I simply stick with the same occupation or do I make a pivot in that area too? Here's the contingency, or here's the caveat, I would say. If you're familiar with our podcast, if you're familiar with our brand, you know that one of the things that we teach again and again and again is that if you don't know what you want, it's going to be really difficult for you to get what you want. That's, again, really simple logic, but I think that that's going to be more important now than it ever has been in the past, especially for the course of the next 12 months. Here's why that's going to be the case, regardless of whether you are just changing companies or changing your occupation to some degree, or just making a very slight pivot or someplace in between. If you are not clear on what it is that you want and need with your next step and beyond, then that means that it's going to be really difficult to ask for what you want too. And it's going to get more important that you're able to ask for what you want, even as a skill set on its own, because we're going to shift more and more, especially over the next few months, to building relationships in a digital format. I think everybody can probably agree on that. Like, if you got jobs through going and having coffee meetings before, well, you know, it's not going to happen quite as much as what you were used to. This means that, going back to Sabrina's question here, I started this out with, if this is something that's important to you, and this is true for anything that's important in your life, I would encourage you to keep those things that are most important to you as a priority and simply change how you're going about them. The other day in a conversation, I was using like caring for my family as an example and caring for your family as an example. If you've taken on a second role as a part-time teacher in the most recent past, then you might understand this too. Like, my family matters a whole bunch to me. And the way that I am interacting with them and caring for them now differs slightly than I did, you know, 2 months ago. And the same thing is true for a job search or a career change. If that is something that is really important to you, and making a move to work that is meaningful and pays well and anything else that is a high goal on your list, then keep pushing forward, but you're going to need to change how you're doing it in light of recent events. And we can continue to talk specifically about how that will happen too. Let's say, Philip, let's go on to question number three here too. And I see, yeah, we have a huge amount of people that are looking for one to two jobs, few people that are looking to do stuff across a few markets. That's awesome. And we can also talk a little bit about how to change right now and what changing your approach actually looks like too. All right, let's go into question number three here. So this comes from Sheldon, and it might be the same Sheldon that I see in the chat here too. So Sheldon says, how do you meet people to learn about opportunities and make connections in a time where most people are staying away from other people and companies are tightening their belts, making them less likely to hire someone who's never done a specific job even more than before? Sheldon, I disagree with the assessment that companies are going to be less likely to hire someone who has never done a specific job even more than before. And we can come back and talk about that. But I think that you're right on so on with that first part of your assessment that, you know, many people are staying away from other people and companies are encouraging them to, and governments are encouraging them to. And I believe rightfully so, for the greater good in this particular case. That said, that means that over the course of the next 12 months and beyond, people who learn to build relationships in a digital fashion are going to thrive. Those are the people who are going to get opportunities. Those are the people who are going to have positions made for them. Those are the people who are going to be in a position to really get what they want and what they're looking for. And if you're on here right now, I'm guessing you're probably not looking for just the average job. I'm guessing actually probably many of the people that are on here right now, if you're watching this, if you're listening to this, if you're participating in the chat, a lot of people on here can go get a job. I'm guessing you're actually looking for something that is a better situation than what you have now, whether it's more meaningful, whether it pays higher, whether it is more fulfilling on any other different great long list of things that might make it better for your specific situation. That said, let me give you an example of how that might look. So let's use a real world example for somebody that we've worked with in the past. Coronavirus hit this long before we really even knew what social distancing actually meant. This is long before toilet paper rushes and everything in between. So if you've listened to the podcast before, you might have heard one or a couple of these stories. Let's talk about, we'll use Laura as an example, Laura Morrison, because she's one of my favorite stories. And when we started working with her, she was very much in a similar fashion where she wasn't quite sure how she was going to do this over a long distance because she was looking for either something that was remote work. Congratulations. Many people just got remote work recently. But in her case, she was looking for something that had a high degree of flexibility, potentially remote work. And also she wanted a very specific type of challenge too. So it meant finding the right organization and the right group of people to work with too. So in Laura's case, here's what she did. We spent about two and a half months working with her to really define what creates the ideal career opportunity. And she put in some really hard work there working with her coach. And what came out of that is what we call an ideal career profile. And think about an ideal career profile as just a really simple tool to be able to begin building a checklist of what she needed and wanted most. Because that then goes back to what we talked about before, where I need to be able to articulate what I actually want and what I actually need. Otherwise, it's going to be really difficult to find that in the real world. Okay, so here's what Laura did to begin building relationships. In her case, and this is just one of many approaches that we use. So what's the right approach for her may not be the right approach for you, but I want to give you a real world example. So she reached out to about 40 different people overall. She ended up having 20 something conversations with people that were at organizations that she felt were a great fit or in roles that she was interested in or felt she, you know, could have some interest in. What she did in most of those times where she reached out, sometimes that was via LinkedIn, sometimes she literally picked up the phone, sometimes that was a direct email, and she would say something like, "Hey, I know that I'm going to be making a career change here in the next, you know, little while. That's not right this second. However, I'm really interested in learning more about your organization because it looks like the type of organization that I could fit with," I think is some of the verbiage that she was using in particular. And then she'd say something to the effect of, like, "I would love to have a 15-minute conversation with you. And I just want to ask you some questions about what you enjoy about your organization and many other things. And would you be willing to schedule with me sometime in the future?" She'd get about roughly a 50 to 70% response rate with that. And she had many of those short meetings. Often they would get talking and all of a sudden an hour would pass instead of just the 15 minutes. And then what would happen is at that point, she now has the beginning of a relationship. What ended up happening, if we fast forward for her about 6 or 7 months into the future, is she had multiple job offers, multiple opportunities with different organizations where they hadn't necessarily even posted on the outside. And she ended up going through and meeting not one person, but many people in the one particular organization, and chose to work with them. They ended up modifying the role slightly. They got her into a different role than what she was originally talking about, and ended up finding all the things that she was looking for at a pay increase. So that's one example. The reason I wanted to give you an example is to help you understand how this works. What we find is that behind the scenes, we spend a lot of time with people identifying what is the right way to reach out in your situation that really leverages your personality, your strengths, and you know some of the assets that you have, because it is slightly different on a per person basis. Okay. So that said, we can talk about some other examples here too, but I wanted to come back and comment on this. Companies will be tightening their belts, making them less likely. Yeah, that is true absolutely for some organizations. Some are going to keep going through as normal, and some are rampantly trying to find the right type of people to fulfill new roles. Here's what's been my experience from the last time the economy took a downturn. What I saw is that what seems to be happening now, that some organizations are benefiting quite a bit, and some organizations are growing, and some organizations are getting really creative about opportunities. That means often that they need new positions that they didn't have before in creation, and they're looking for the right type of people. Well, if any of you are in hiring positions or have been in hiring positions in the past, what happens when you need someone? One of the first things that you do, you know, instead of just going to your recruiter or just looking through a stack of resumes, the first thing that you start to do is think about, like, who do I know that would be a great fit for this role? Part of what we do when we're working with somebody is think about the reverse engineering of that. How do we create the time and opportunity and place to where you're going to be that person that that organization or that person in that organization thinks of? So you can think about it that way. Part of the reason I'm going into that level of detail for you is I want you to begin thinking about this differently. Begin looking at what is the end result that you want, and how do we work backwards from that to create an individualized plan? That takes a lot of creativity. Okay, so I want to keep going here because we've got lots of questions to answer, some that are already sent in, some that are coming in by the moment here. And let's see, question number four here. What are the opportunities around this? Will we work differently? Should I look for online employment? I think this is such a great question. It's a great question because I think, first of all, it's with a different mindset than many of the other questions that we've had sent in. They're all really great questions in terms of moving people closer to what they need and what they want. And this one even goes the extra step to say, okay, how can I be proactive here? And I think that's pretty cool. So Christina, thanks for sending it in, first of all. And on top of that, I think that there's a huge amount of opportunities. First of all, any introverts here, drop a heck yeah into the chat if you identify more as an introvert. I'm super curious. Ryan, yes. Alex, yes. Katie, yes. Shannon, Jason, becoming less so. Lynn, Dan. Okay, so we got a lot of introverts here. Guess what? Introverts are going to benefit quite a bit because when you're getting really great at building relationships in a digital environment, introverts actually have a little bit of a heads up in some ways. Not in every way, but in some ways. Yes, finally, a world that has been historically catered to extroverts is now, you know, topsy-turvy. So very weird transgression in that. Nancy says that I already know introverts are benefiting. Okay, so introvert or not, absolutely taking the time and opportunity to build your skill sets around building relationships in a digital environment is going to be beneficial. That's thing number one. I think that's a huge opportunity. If you spend time and energy and focus on that, particularly as it relates to finding the ways that are going to work for you, not just looking at every single opportunity out there. Part of the reason we aren't just like an information serve type company and organization, and we're not just a publishing organization, is because we find that weird humans are different. One person is different than the next person. And what is the right technique to be able to build relationships, an approach for building relationships in a digital format that's right for me may not be perfect for you. And that's totally okay. So investing time and energy into finding what is going to be right for you, regardless of whether you're working with a coach or not, that is going to be something that is going to be almost critical in the upcoming 6 months is what I would anticipate, assuming you want more than just a regular job. for lack of a better phrase. So that's opportunity number one. Opportunity number two, I alluded to a little bit earlier. And the show that I was on earlier actually created a chart for them. What you see is on the left-hand side, activity around job search. And it might be hard to see, but it is essentially just totally dropped off for the next couple of months. It's very, very, very low. And it was recently very, very high. I think that in itself is an advantage for people. I think between the next 60 to 90 days, there's going to be relatively little. Doesn't mean there's going to be none, but relatively little activity specifically around job search and changing companies comparatively to what it was 4 weeks ago. And then what I think is going to happen, if I'm just looking ahead and just using logical reasoning, what I think is going to happen is that many people who are waiting and seeing, those people are eventually going to get tired of waiting. And they're going to get to a point where it's like, ah, I need to do something. And then they're going to stop waiting. Part of that chart that I just showed you, if you could see it, it takes a huge spike around June, July, August, and September. Keep in mind that as we've been tracking data too, September is a huge month where people just are back from, like their kids are back in school and you return to some sort of normalcy in many different ways. And that in a normal period is a massive, massive month. I expect we're still going to get some of that normalcy as we have kids return to school and many other things too. As that happens, then we're going to get a very, very large influx of people who are all making activity in the market at once. Okay, so I point that out for two reasons. One, I think that there is an opportunity there, just in terms of level of activity and organizations trying to find really, really great people in essentially new types of roles that they haven't ever had before. And they're going to be looking for that, especially the types of organizations that you're interested in working with. And also, at the exact same time, everyone, this is the part I don't think anybody's thinking about yet, everyone is going to be going back to the methods that they have had work for them before, which is, I bet you know this part, how do you get a job right now? Like, what's the way that we think of when we get a job? Type it in the chat. Just your best guess. What do you do when you need to go and search and get a job? Networking, resume, apply online. Yeah, I think online applications and places like Indeed and LinkedIn and you name it are going to get overrun, completely overrun. So for me, anytime like everybody is doing one thing, that always spells opportunity to do the opposite. Again, that's where it comes into play about getting really good about building relationships digitally. That's something we've been doing for years. Like we've run this company for almost 8 years at this point, and we've been teaching that for since before I had the company. Now it just is more important than it ever has been before. Okay, so the real opportunity there is if you're taking the time and energy and effort to learn how to do that for yourself in a way that works for you, then while everybody else is applying online, you're going to be essentially sneaking in the back door and have already had some of those relationships built. And as those organizations are continuing to grow and continuing to need people, then they're going to look to you to cut through the clutter as opposed to going to the massive stack of resumes, which I don't know about you, but I just recently had posted for a executive assistant and we got 1,000, no joke. We got literally 1,000. This was prior to us even, prior to coronavirus, prior to all the things. This was, weeks ago, 1,000 applications. That's a massive amount. It hurt my eyes, for lack of a better phrase, to look at anywhere close to 1,000 applications. So you can start to see how these piece together. All right, let's take one or two questions here that we've had in the link. Philip, can you, and then we've got some in the Q&A section too. Feel free to drop your questions into the Q&A section as well. There is a separate Q&A section and you can actually up those questions too in the Q&A section as well here.
Yeah, so we've got some questions coming in. One from Chris. He was talking about wanting to change careers and trying to relocate. He just was in the two final rounds of interview, and one of them was a first rounder. But his question is, how do I follow up while recognizing the situation is difficult for everyone?
It's a good question. This is such a great question. It is going to take a different level of tact and respect as we're moving through this and a different level of cognizance than I think what people had considered necessary before. So let me give you a couple of ways that that might look for you, and even some verbiage, Chris. And by the way, this is the type of thing that we do like every single day, you know, when people are working with our coaches, we go through and get down to this level in many different ways. So what you might do when you're following up, first of all, let's back up half a step. And as you are having interviews, this is even more important. This is something we teach in our program. This is something that we, you may have heard us talk about on the podcast, but it's even more important that when you're going to interviews, you are clarifying specifically how and when and taking ownership of that follow-up. What I mean by that is before the end of the interview, that you are agreeing on how the follow-up and when the follow-up is going to happen. That way, you don't have to feel like a pest if you're like in the waiting game. They're like, they said they're going to follow up sometime, but you know, it hasn't happened. And you can actually clarify that by asking a couple of questions like, hey, when may I follow up with you? And if they say, oh, we'll follow up with you, and say, okay, that's awesome. When do you plan on doing that? And I'm more than happy to take ownership of that. If I don't hear from you by this time, I will give you a call. Is that okay? And you can agree and ask for permission for in advance. And it takes a lot of the guesswork out. Okay, but let's move past that for a second. After you've already been to an interview and you're trying to follow up and you're trying to do so respectfully without being like a pest and knowing that this is difficult for everyone, a couple things that you can do. First of all, anytime you can pick up the phone, that's always easier because it's going to come off completely differently if you can have a conversation. Sometimes you're not going to be able to do that, but if you can, you know, picking up the phone and saying, hey, I am sure that you probably have things going on that you did not anticipate, you know, whatever time period ago. I just want you to know that I'm really very interested in your organization and this feels like a really great fit. And I want to make sure that I'm driving the effort and making it easier on you as we're going through this. So I wanted to understand, you know, what is the next step? How can I help make this easier for you? And where do we go from here? That type of conversation is going to feel very respectful as long as you mean it, as long as you're willing to take the ownership and you're willing to do the follow-up and all those other types of things too. That's going to be important. Let's say that you can't have a phone call for whatever reason. Like everybody is now working remotely. They don't even have phones in the office at this point. So what you can do is something similar, just in an email form, sending that type of message. It can be very simple saying, hey, you know, I so appreciate that you took the time prior to going into this. I so appreciate that you answered all my questions in the last interview. Insert something that you genuinely appreciate here about your last interaction with them. And then say, I felt like this was a great potential fit. And I wanted to make sure that I'm owning the follow-up to make it easier on you. What is the next step, or have you made a decision? Whatever would be appropriate in asking from there. That type of really simple message is going to convey caring, is going to convey appreciation, and at the same time, it's going to communicate proactivity as well. And the final thing that I would put in the message, in addition to what I already mentioned, is that, hey, if you are flooded right now and just don't have time to communicate a response, just reply, you know, yes to the message, or like one word, your word of choice. And I'll know that that means that you're going to get back to me at some point. But that type of approach to make it easy on them is going to go a long way. And it keeps you in front of them at the same time. Doing nothing and waiting it out is almost never going to be a good solution compared to sending something that is simple and caring and is owning the process. Philip, I think we have time for another question here really quick. What's the next one that we have?
Sure. We have a question coming in about what types of industries are hiring right now and what kinds of positions do you think they'll be hiring or possibly creating in the future? This comes from Tracy. So thanks for your question, Tracy.
Yeah. This is a great question. I want to answer this question because I think it's fascinating. I also want to tell you that if you're solely dictating a lot of what you want based on what specifically you perceive the opportunities to be out there, like, hey, how can I latch onto a growing industry? Then I would advise you away from that. That is a as a short-term solution, it often does not create really meaningful work. It doesn't create many of the things that people come to us for or ask additional questions. So I don't know if that's your intention at all, but just for everybody listening, I want to make sure that I'm making that distinction. Instead, I would focus on what you want and need, and then we can learn where to find that in the real world versus starting particularly with an industry that seems like it might be a good opportunity. So just a slight reverse with how to think about it. That said, well, we know that we're using Zoom right now. Zoom has had a huge influx, and telecommunications industries have had a huge influx in the last little bit here. I expect that will continue to grow. I think in the long term, something else that, like, if you start to think, well, what opportunities have happened? What problems does that create? Well, working from home is actually not easy. I know a lot of people want that. It is a whole different skill set on its own. Hugely different skill set on its own. So I think you're going to start to see almost a, not a new industry, but I think you're going to see a lot more ways to help with that, not just in telecommunication solutions, but I think you'll see things like coaching and service industries for how to work as a distributed team pop up more and more and more. And I think that there'll be a lot of growth in those types of industries. And it's almost like if you think about the gold rush way back when, all of the industries that popped up from what everybody was doing, shovels and Levi's jeans and all kinds of different products grew that stimulated whole entire industries in many different ways. So if you want to think about it like that, you can start to follow what the chain is on your own and come to some of your own answers too. But I just wanted to give you a couple examples here as well. I'm going to do two things here. One, I promised at the very beginning that if you wanted it, I would absolutely show you one of the most successful ways that we work with people and how specifically we do that, and give you a sneak peek into that, because I know that we've also got a lot of questions about, hey, how do I hire you and get additional guidance? Because this is totally new ground and totally new territory for me. So if that's something that you want, drop me a yes in the chat. If that's not something you want, then I'm just going to move on, for lack of a better phrase here. But yeah, just drop me a yes in the chat if that's something you're looking for. Ryan says yes. Alexander says yes. Jason says yes. Okay, so we're getting a lot of yeses here. And then since that's the case, I'll tell you one other thing too. I will stay around afterwards. We only planned on this running from, well, until the end of the hour here. I will stay around some additional time, an extra 15 minutes in order. I know Philip has to run here at that time. He has another appointment, one of our clients is working with him. I'll stay around a little bit extra time to try and answer as many of these questions as I possibly can. Okay. One of the most successful ways that we have found that we work with people that we've iterated upon over the last, oh my goodness, I think five, almost 6 years at this point, since we first had the first version of this program and improved it every single year, is Career Change Bootcamp. It's something that if you're a podcast listener or you have been on our email list for any length of time, you've probably heard of in one way or another. And the reason why I'm introducing that to you, actually, there's two different reasons. One is particularly because inside of Career Change Bootcamp, we actually teach you a lot of the things that we talked about, a whole lot more in addition to that, but how to build relationships digitally. I mentioned offhand that we've been doing that for 8 years. And this program in particular is a big, really, really successful way that we actually do that, and then pair people up with coaches when you're in the situation of wanting to do work that really fits you and not necessarily knowing how to get there, especially in the current environment, especially if you're an introvert, especially if you're interested in more than just a job change and instead looking for a career that really actually fits and pays incredibly well. So the way that we do that is really two different ways. We pair you up with, and Philip's actually one of the people who are specifically involved with that. You have a conversation with Philip. He does a fantastic job of asking you questions to understand what you need. He makes a recommendation in terms of the exact type of support you would need within the program. And then between him and the rest of our team, we match you up with a career coach that uniquely fits your situation. And then you literally day one, schedule a call with that. We call it a kickoff success call, where you're proactively with your coach deciding, how do I move through the program and how do I experience coaching in a way that benefits me the very most in my situation, in my goals, and my time frame. And then the other side of the program is we combine that together with a world-class leading, what we call it a framework, but really it's even almost a curriculum where we teach you how to do the types of things that we talked about. And it's divided into 8 different parts, starting with how do you actually look at this stuff completely differently, starting with mindset. And you know, that's the first part. So we help you look at not just job search, but careers completely differently than the way that you're looking at it right now. And we also recognize that when we do a great job of helping people rewire their mindset up front, they move faster during the actual career change portion too. And then we focus on helping you identify what we call your signature strengths, and not just the identification part, but beginning to attach that to where you can find your unique ways to contribute in the world, because that's the hard part, as it turns out. And part of the way that we do that is by creating what we call an ideal career profile. And I mentioned that offhand earlier, but it becomes this really, really useful tool that our students and clients have told us again and again, that it just makes it so much easier to be clear about what they want and what they need, so that when they go and they're in it, not in an interview situation, or you know, a digital meeting like this, or you know, something else, digital coffee, I guess, that might become a thing, whatever it is, they're in a position to be able to clearly articulate what it is that they want, need, and what they want. And then they're working with their coach at that same time to understand, how do I actually do that? But we actually don't stop there. One of the things that we find is that people as a whole, myself included, we often think we know what we need, but at the end of the day, that's just an educated guess. We actually help you design ways to test that out before you move full on into that direction. Doesn't necessarily mean you have to do 17 different career changes. We design small experiments to help you learn, am I heading the right direction, before getting to a new role and a new job and saying, oh my goodness, I didn't think about all these things. Now I'm 6 months in, the honeymoon period is worn off, and I'm in the same exact situation. That's not good for you. It's not good for us. It certainly doesn't create success stories like the ones you hear on the podcast. So instead, we approach it quite a bit differently. So we help you design an experiment. And then once we know where you're heading and where you need to head and what are the types of target organizations that you want to approach, then we teach you, how do you actually build relationships with them? And then we start to put a plan into place for how to act upon that. We also do cover things like resumes and interviewing, but it's drastically different than a lot of the things that I've seen taught out there, because for the most part, although yes, you do need to have a decent resume, your resume is probably not the thing that's going to get you the types of opportunities we've been talking about. And one of the things that you've probably heard on the podcast again and again and again, that I'll let you in on what the secret is, I'm fascinated with negotiation. It's something that I absolutely love. It's always like a psychological experiment for me. I know that that makes me a little bit crazy. And I also know that most people are somewhat nervous when it comes to negotiation in various different degrees, and not everybody has negotiated before. When you hear somebody on the podcast talking about how they got a massive pay bump for their salary, making a change from like one type of career to, you know, another industry or another type of career completely, part of the secret behind the scenes is just that we teach them to negotiate really well, and we pair, like our coaches negotiate really well. And through that process, we've found that there's no better time other than changing from one organization to another organization to increase your salary pretty drastically. Is that true for every single person? No, absolutely not. We do have a small percentage of people that on the other side end up accepting less. However, we find the vast majority of people are making the same or more compared to what they're making currently. That said, I can't make that as a guarantee no matter what, because you're the one who gets to decide what job offer you accept or not, or whether or not you put the advice that we give you into place. So ultimately, you're the one who decides that in the long run. But here's what I would tell you. If what we've talked about so far through not just this last 5 minutes or so, but also through the entire Q&A session fits with the way that you want help or that you want to approach, or that you want to take advantage of the opportunities that I think are right in front of you. Because I saw a lot of people saying, hey, like, I want to make a change by fall. I want to make a change by summer. Well, guess what? Then that's going to require you to behave differently and develop different skill sets. So if that is you, then I would encourage you to reach out to us to schedule an appointment with Philip, and we can figure out if this really is the right fit for you. Also, if you're more than like 18 months or 2 years out, then I would tell you to probably wait. Otherwise, if you're very interested in how do I focus my time and effort on taking the right actions right now to set myself up for success later, then that's where I would absolutely reach out, because what we teach, we found, and you may have heard this on the podcast since we started doing the Where Are They Now series, where we bring people back 3 or 4 years later, when people take the time and effort to invest in themselves in this particular way, it impacts them pretty drastically. Years in the future, their next change after that, I can't even tell you all the ways quality of life. They're able to draw boundaries differently. They're able to secure situations for themselves. It eliminates a lot of worry. It doesn't make your life perfect, but it helps you understand what you want and need and live in more of that, especially through your career. So if that's something you're interested in, by all means, like, pull open the link right now. Philip will drop it in the chat. Have that open. Find a time on our schedule. The one thing I will tell you is that we did not anticipate, this is a great problem to have, but we did not anticipate the sheer amount of people that are reaching out to us right now. So there are not as many spots open as what we had for calls in the past. We're trying to figure out what to do about that on our team right now. Also, at the same time, we now only have 12 spots left in Career Change Bootcamp. Normally about this time, we have closer to 20. So those are good problems, but we're trying to figure out how we can help even more people, because we realize that people need help during this time of need. What I will tell you too is something that we are doing internally is, you know, when people are having a call with Philip right now, we are actually giving them an additional 2 months of support at our, like, we're paying for that. It's not free. We're actually paying for it. We have to pay for that. But we're doing that for people, just anticipating what if it does take a little bit longer than average. So if you're here right now, just let Philip know that you had heard about us through this session and you scheduled a call through this session, and he'll help you take advantage of the extra 2 months of support, and we'll do that. We'll flip the bill on that for you. Links in the chat. Click on that. That way it doesn't get lost sight, because I know Philip is going to jump out here. I'm going to stay on for an additional 15 minutes just to try and answer as many of these questions that have been coming in as possible in different places here.
We have a question that came in from an anonymous person, but it's a question that I need you to kick in the butt. But it's right now, people, you know, they'll be busy. They're at home with families, working from home, grocery stocking. Maybe even they're sick, or they have family members that are sick. Would these people, and how we're telling people to go out and network, would we be having them cause and create further strain by making a request for a digital networking?
I think that's a great question. And the fact that you're even thinking about it indicates the type of person you are. And I think that that's pretty cool that you're considering that. We need more people in the world like you. That's awesome. And also, here's what I would tell you. If you are just randomly reaching out to people and essentially causing extra work for them, that's not cool. If you have gone to great pains to understand what you want and how you can contribute to organizations, and you've already built out a list of target organizations that you're really interested in, and maybe you don't know for sure, but you suspect pretty strongly that you can contribute to their cause and what they're doing, then that in itself is already predisposed to be more helpful. So that's the prerequisite. If you're just randomly reaching out to things that you think there's opportunities there, I would say, please don't do that. Like, my email box is full. Philip's email box is full. Like, I can imagine that executives all over the place are experiencing the same thing with just crazy changes and increased communications and you name it. If you already have done that harder work of understanding what you want and what you need, then you're actually potentially creating opportunity. And if you use some messaging like we talked about before, where you're giving sensitivity to that, and the way that that might sound is saying something like, hey, I know it might be crazy right now. I really would love to have a conversation with you as your availability comes open. Totally okay if that's not right now. Just let me know, you know, when would be the best time to follow up to make sure that I can do that, even if that's 2 years in the future or whatever. Adding some slight bit of extra, very simple communication to indicate that essentially you have their back and you're willing to own this, that's something most people are not going to be willing to do. And it comes across differently in email. Is it going to be perfect every time? And is there a chance for misperceiving it from the reader on the other end? Absolutely. That's the case for every email that you send or every message that you send and text message that you send everywhere. It probably will happen. If it does happen, that's okay. That's totally okay. It doesn't mean that that is a closed door opportunity. It doesn't mean that that person has blackballed you from their email. It doesn't mean any of that. What it does mean is it might take you, in fact, several messages to be able to, you know, get an opportunity to meet them. It might take additional sensitivity like we're talking about. So yes, I think the fact that you're paying attention to that indicates to me that you're going to be okay and you're going to probably be able to figure out some of those answers. And if you were pretty worried about that, that's even more reason to schedule a time with Philip and we can figure out how to support you through all of these little nitty gritty type situations that people come across. Like, hey, I just got an email back and they want to offer me, but it's probably not going to happen until a month in the future. So like, how do I handle that? And what main communication should happen? Like all of those types of questions that come up. That's what we're working with every single day. It's much easier to talk to a live human being that knows your situation, knows everything about what you want, and can give you really specific advice on that too. So if you want more help on that, by all means, schedule a call. What other questions do we have here too?
A ton of questions here.
This is why I love doing this, by the way, because all of you ask such great questions. It makes it just as fun for me as well.
One question we have that has come in is, so we've got two obstacle types of questions.
Yes.
One is, as of late, this is the response or the question. As of late, I've been advised that I've had to become a specialist. As someone who likes a ton of variety and is a lifelong learner, we talk to lots of people like you, and I'm always learning and taking classes and downloading way too much content. I don't want to specialize. How do I overcome this obstacle? It's the specialized versus generalized conundrum that we get.
Oh my goodness, this is such a good question. It's such a relevant question, and it just doesn't get talked about enough, unfortunately. Sometimes it doesn't get talked about at all because everybody's like, well, obviously you have to like hard skill special. Obviously, here's what I anticipate. This, I think, is actually another opportunity for what we'll see. I think that, first of all, generalists are probably going to thrive in the types of environments that are going to pop up here over the course of the next year. Companies are going to become more lean. Companies are going to need people to wear more hats. And is that every organization? No, absolutely not. And some organizations will just stay super huge and they'll have lots and lots of specialization. And it might make sense for them. It doesn't, like, the same strategy doesn't make sense for every organization. I think that there'll be more opportunity and more acceptance of generalists. And hopefully that advice doesn't get it recycled again and again. But here's a lot of things that people typically are not thinking about when they ask that type of question. And hopefully this helps you. Let us know if it does. So thing number one is aligning with an environment that benefits from having a generalist is really helpful. Be quite honest, Philip and I got to meet at an event long before we ever considered bringing Philip on board. One of the reasons that, as I had interacted with Philip several times, that he stuck in my head is because he had experience in a lot of different areas. We're not a massive organization. We only have 10 people in our organization. And therefore, we are an organization that must have people that can wear a lot of hats and thrive in doing so. Like, if you can't get excited about that, we're not the right organization for you. And I would look at it from the opposite perspective, in that if you're the candidate seeking out an organization, you need that kind of match. Otherwise, you're going to have the wrong types of challenges. You're going to get either bored or you're going to start to hate life real quick. So feel free to let me know if you've already thought about it that way. But some examples of either organizations or industries that thrive in that are organizations that are smaller, organizations that have a culture where they need people to be rapidly learning, which typically those are found in rapidly changing industries. Technology is a good one. Yeah, good for startups. Jason, you mentioned that. Yes, absolutely. I also see it as a positive as well. And I would say, yes, it does work very well. Not in all startups, but in a lot of startups. Nonprofits. Yeah, Katie, great point. Nonprofits, not all nonprofits. Some nonprofits are very, very traditional. That said, it does benefit well for nonprofits because they're also doing a lot of things. Almost every person that I've worked with in nonprofit They do a lot of different things. So yes, those are some examples. But I think what's most important is you're grabbing a hold of that and saying, okay, well, what are the pieces that I need? In terms of learning, what is the context in which you thrive for learning? So for example, me, I'm also very much a learner. I need to have that. I must have that. All human beings need it to some degree. Some people need it way more than others. I personally thrive when I'm getting to use the learning and tangibly see it. So I can't just learn about it. I've got to be able to sort of apply it right away. If I don't have that and I can't like see it work its way into whatever I'm doing at the time, whatever project I'm working on, then it's not as good for me. It's fun, but it's not the lasting satisfaction that I'm looking for personally. So that's one example. You're going to need to do some of the hard work to figure out what are those things for you. And again, if you're getting really stuck trying to answer some of those questions, that would be a good indication about reach out to us and have a conversation. We can figure out the right type of way to help. Also, if you're getting really stuck for how to apply that, like we encounter people all the time. We're like, I already know about this stuff about myself, but like, I don't know how to make this work in reality or where to find these types of organizations and the functionality around that. That would be another indication to reach out to us, have a conversation, and we can determine like what is the right type of help. What other questions do we have too? Oh, Don was asking.
Same kind of type of question, but you can go ahead and answer yes to all the questions that I think Don has. First one is, can I do CCB? And I'm sure lots of people are in this space with two elementary kids suddenly homeschooling for next 6 weeks. I know your kids are at home, Scott. So the next question is, do you help folks figure out whether they ought to be working for themselves or potentially for somebody else? And her third question is, or like if you're torn between something that you know you can do with some amount of happiness and competence and something else that you feel is, you know, way more vulnerable and uncertainty and risky. Does CCB help you figure out that as well?
These are great questions. So to be clear, all of our programs, not just CCB, but every single one of our programs is the polar opposite of how people think it works. Usually what happens is that people are like, how much time do I need to do this program so that I can get the most out of it? Which is a perfectly legitimate question. And almost everybody asks some variation of that. We don't look at it that way. We look at it and we built all of our programs and all of our coaching to work the opposite way. Let's take instead the approach of what time do you have available that you want to devote towards making this change for yourself? I'm not even talking about the program, but to making this change for yourself. Okay, let's make sure that we are developing a plan to move through the program that fits that. So that helps cater it to where does it fall in terms of making it a reality for you. And here's the reason why we do that. We have learned by doing it wrong in the past early on that everybody has different amounts of time available. Everybody is starting from different places in terms of skill sets and experiences and you name it. Everybody's starting from just a different place. And that means that almost any situation where we're set up to, you must conform to this, is kind of set up to not move as fast or not be as successful from the beginning. So we take the opposite approach and say, okay, how can we fit this into your reality? Because we find that people are more successful when they're making continuous progress and seeing the momentum from continuous progress in their career change, regardless of whether they're at what we call the identification stage, which is, let's identify what I need. Let's develop out my ideal career profile. Let's begin to identify target organizations and potential roles, or whether they're in, you know, latter stages of how do I actually functionally, you know, get the job search type phase. So regardless of what it is, we take that same approach and we help you fit it into your world, because otherwise you're starting from behind and that's no good. It's also one of the reasons behind the scenes why you hear so many success stories, because honestly, it's been really difficult to create a program like that that works in that way. And it's taken a lot of iteration over the last however many years. And we get better every single year that goes by. So those are great questions. Hopefully that helps answer that question. So yes, no matter how many elementary age kids you have at home, your coach will help you make it work for your world. And that's also, I think, the mentality you should come into any type of help or any type of investment that you're making in your world or your career or otherwise. Like, how can I make this work for me? Okay. We had other portions or other follow-up questions too, though. Let's see. Or like, if you're torn between something that you know you can do with the amount of happiness and competence and something that feels way more vulnerable and uncertain and risky. Yes, CCB does help you sort through that. Yeah, that is not easy to sort through that, to put it mildly, because you start to get into a lot of emotions that people don't anticipate are going to be involved with making a career change and identity and you name it that we see every day. And when people are on the beginning stage of it, they just don't even realize that that's part of making this type of change. So I love that you're thinking about that in the first place. So yes is the short answer. Great question. And I think I missed a couple of these other questions. Jump in and help me.
Yeah, Sheldon was coming and asking another one of our questions. On the same note, you know, about relocating and networking in a new area, what about those people who just recently located and are trying to find something new in a potentially a new place?
Yeah, short answer is yes. I mean, we focus on teaching principles. This might sound kind of vague, but I'll try and make it more tangible here. We focus really much on teaching principles that work in every situation. And then when people are working with our coaches, that's where we get to the much more tactical level, because the tactics that work for me are not going to be the tactics that are going to work for you, most likely. So we teach principles that work in every situation. That way people understand what's behind it. And then when we get down to the nitty-gritty of tactics, that's best done in a one-on-one type situation. Not all the time, but a lot of the time. Hopefully that helps. That's as it relates to CCB. The other thing I would encourage you to say is, or encourage you to think about, is really investing into upping your skill from a digital relationship building capacity, like we were talking about earlier, because it's going to be especially critical if you've moved to a new area, especially if you may have less of a network there. And everybody else is wondering like how to do the same thing too. It's like when you go to a party and like everybody sort of looks awkwardly at one another. And like the first person to break the ice, everybody's like, oh my goodness, thank goodness. It's sort of that type of thing, but now everybody's in their own home, but it's the same weird sort of situation that is kind of developing and simmering. Okay, what else do we have here?
I have three more questions. Karen Andrews, she asks, thanks for your question, Karen. Do participants practice interviewing with each other in CCB?
This is a great question. So this happens a little bit differently for each person. Not everybody who comes into CCB is looking specifically for interview help. So some people are like, hey, that's actually something that I feel pretty good at, and I would like to devote my time and effort towards the other areas that I feel less good about and want more help with. For the people that come into CCB, that it is a big priority for them to either practice interviewing or to become better at interviewing or better at prep for interviewing, which we teach some really cool things that I've been developing on my own for about almost 20 years now, as far as interviewing. So we just have a totally different philosophy for like how to prep compared to what you might see out there. Aside from that, you'll either do mock interviews with your coach, and that might happen during coaching time. You can pair up with other people in the group, because we have a entire community that is just specific for people that are in CCB. And if you need help pairing up, then that's something we can absolutely help or assist with. So that's another way that that happens. And then we also have people that actually want additional interview support well beyond just doing a couple of practice sessions or practice interviewing or mock interviewing. And if that's you, then I would say when you talk to Philip, let Philip know. And often we'll do a slightly custom package for that person, building in additional interview support. We've done that in the past for people that are like, oh my goodness, I'm great in so many social situations until I get in an interview and then I just like totally fall apart for whatever reason. And there's a huge number of reasons why that happens to people, but we've done that in the past for that situation or a variety of other situations too. So don't hesitate to be, when you chat with Philip or anybody on our team for that matter, we teach people to ask for what they want and be blatantly transparent with what you feel like you need, and that help you even better. So I would encourage you, of course, to do that with Philip or anybody that you're interacting with on our team, coach or otherwise. That's a great question.
Thumbs up there. Jason asks, if you're coming from a point where you have been unemployed for a while, maybe unfair discrimination, all those types of stuff, how does someone in those situations, especially in this market, how would somebody in that situation overcome these real or perceived obstacles?
You know, I've been involved with that a lot of times, partially from, I used to work in HR leadership. So I've seen some really unfortunate situations, both in companies that I worked with on like a small scale level, and also in other organizations. And I have seen a lot of those situations as I, you know, shifted into this organization here and began building it. So what I've learned from all seeing it in all those different types of perspectives is that the hardest part is the, how shall I put it? The perceptions and predispositions that it causes for people that have been through that really unfortunate, really terrible and very challenging situation. And what I mean by that is when something like that happens to you, then it ends up putting up a bunch of walls that, and I've personally experienced this. So when it happens to you, it ends up putting a bunch of walls that you don't realize and you behave differently. And you, sometimes, not for everybody, but for a lot of people, it causes us to miss other opportunities that are there. And that's what I see happen again and again. And I don't know if that is what will happen in your situation. I don't know at all. But that is something that I've seen again and again and again from otherwise really smart, really talented, really capable people that have just been a part of really unfortunate situations like that. And that is especially a place where coaching is beneficial, because what your coach can do for you is they've got your best interests in mind and have very much a neutral perspective, except for helping you decide what is right for you. So they'll be able to, where they're seeing that happen and where you have blind spots for that, help you recognize that, which is the first priority. And then secondarily, if you encounter situations where that is actually happening, they'll help you work around that. And what I would encourage you, anyone here, to do is organizations where that's rampant, I just don't think you should even be a part of. There's so many other opportunities out there. Like, just move on. So I don't know if that totally answers the question, but I think that's a really legit question for a lot of different reasons. And it's just, it impacts confidence. It impacts so many different things. We just don't even have time to go into all of them here, but I appreciate you asking.
We have another question from Luria. Let me know if I'm pronouncing your name right, but we get this question all the time. And I want you to definitely tackle this. When someone is in a career for a long time, for example, she's been a teacher for 24 years, and doesn't even know what other jobs might exist out there, or how do you even learn what other jobs are out there? So, and how your skills can transfer to those and what you might enjoy, what you might be good at doing, all those things. So how do we help somebody like that?
Aloria, I'm laughing because Tom on our team, Tom's our growth and operations manager. He forwarded me, I think it was an email from you. Were you the one that had said, did you know there's a job called Scrum Master out there? Was that you? Let me know if that was you. But it made me laugh. Anyhow, how do we actually do that? So yes is the short answer. That is one of the things that we do. What I think when people are coming into trying to imagine how that can happen, I think people almost imagine like, I'm going to take an assessment and that's sort of going to like match me up with different careers, or my career coach is going to like give me a list of suggestions that I need to check out. And that isn't the way that it happens in reality. Although your career coach is going to be able to possibly give you some suggestions of like, hey, for your type of strengths, here are the types of environments that could be suitable for you, or here are examples so that you have exposure to, hey, here's how it might be possible in this particular type of environment or situation or job or occupation or whatever it might be. And that does happen. What we find is that through that experimentation portion, remember I mentioned when we were doing a little bit of a sneak preview in Career Change Bootcamp, in the portion of the process where we help you design experiments, that's where most of that learning happens, because we help you design a experiment for how to go out to the real world and get a lot of different types of inputs and feedback quickly, so that you can begin to narrow down what are the situations that could be right for you, and basically ignore all the other stuff out there, because we can give you a list of infinite possibilities. However, that still doesn't help you out in terms of paring down what actually might be right for you. Also, here's the other thing that we know specifically for teachers. Teachers in particular, and my wife's a teacher, so we've had many conversations about this again and again and again. Teachers, almost the most out of any occupation, have a tendency to struggle to imagine how their skill sets can transfer. My wife says, like, when you're in a classroom all day with kids, like whether it's kindergarten all the way up through high school or beyond, like, it's hard to imagine how that can be, how some of the things that you do and you learn can move to a different environment. And the reality is, my wife will also tell you that firsthand, like, she's actually the CFO for our organization at this point. And she has performed almost every task in our organization. What she didn't anticipate is that so many of the skill sets that she's learned in the classroom, ranging from time management to priority management to communication to you name it, have helped her in doing all of these other things. And she still, if she's not careful, she'll be the first to tell you, hey, I undervalue some of those things as well. And we see that happen again and again and again for teachers, mostly because they're just not aware of how valuable what they do can translate to other places. And if you're either not aware or accidentally undervaluing it, that comes across in the interview too. So part of the way that we actually work with you is helping provide visibility to what is very valuable. And that looks different for each person. So I don't know if I've entirely answered your question, but I wanted to help you understand some of the struggles that teachers and some other people in other industries too have a tendency to see. And I'll give you a couple examples of just really quick experiments. I mentioned Laura earlier, you know, that was part of her experiment where she literally reached out to 40 different people within organizations and roles that she thought might fit potentially. She made an educated guess. She found that some of them, like she was really interested in innovation, and she had a couple of conversations. She's like, I am never doing that ever. And that's okay. That's good. It helped her rule some of that stuff out. And instead, she ended up getting great feedback through product management, which is something that she thought maybe I would enjoy, but didn't really know. She got further into those conversations and those experiments. She's like, oh, I can dig into this. Yeah, totally. That's one example, but experiments are tailored to the individual.
A couple of questions I saw came in all around the education piece of going back to school. I see one from Alex. I saw another one. I can't remember the name, but the question is, how about if new education is required to enter a field, how does this change your strategy? Or if someone was looking to probably, if it required possibly going back to school, how do we help people navigate that?
We encounter this question all the time, partially because I think it's just a really good question. And it is the traditional way that we know about to make a career change in one way or another. You might be surprised to learn that out of the people that we work with, we see less than 10% of them actually go back to school to make that change. It was a surprise to me, but that's one trend that we've seen over and over again. Part of that is just because the education and skill set development landscape has changed so much that when you are changing careers or industries or something else, that unless you're going into something that is really highly regulated, like I'm going to be a medical doctor, like you're absolutely going to go back to school for a lot of years to be able to make that happen. But if you're going to, like I made a career change at one point from HR to marketing and then operations to HR and a bunch of other different areas too, going back to school is not the most effective way. And when I say effective, I'm talking about in terms of my time spent, money spent. You know, I was unwilling to pay ranging from $40,000 to $80,000 and 2 years of my life in order to make that change. So I found more effective ways to be able to get skilled up. And then I focused on building relationships in many of those cases to be able to make those changes. And people were willing to take a chance on me, even though I didn't necessarily have the quote unquote like perfect resume. And we see those types of exceptions a lot, all the time, constantly. Partially because we're all human beings and we all have biases, and I don't want you to misuse those biases once we teach you about those types of psychology, but I do want you to leverage that in order to create a situation that is really good for an organization, the people in that organization, and you. So going back to answer the question directly, like how do we handle that? Well, we determine, okay, are you likely to go into this industry or situation that requires extra schooling? And if it really does, is that actually the best and most functional way to be able to make that transition? If it is, then we help you build a plan to be able to go back to school. And that's great. I would much rather have done my homework and know that if I'm going to go spend like $40,000 on something in a couple of years of my life, that it's actually going to lead to something where most people that end up going to school are essentially taking a chance for all intents and purposes. I don't know how many people contact us after they got another master's degree and they're like, I thought this was going to lead me to what I want. And I now realize that it didn't. So we work with a percentage of people that the reason they're coming to us is to try and answer that question for themselves. And it makes sense for them to invest some time and money to answer that before spending $40,000 rather than to take a chance and gamble on it. But yeah, the majority of people we do work with, we find a better way.
We had another question come in, and we actually had some recruiters come on. And they were asking, how can recruiters help job candidates? And how, and more of a bigger question of how can we all help each other really make sure we're dealing the best with this, with everything going on in the world?
We have a lot of people that are in recruiting that are on our email list or listen to the podcast. We've learned that over the last number of years. And we got a lot of questions actually from a variety of recruiters over the last week or so. So I so appreciate that you're asking this question in the first place. I think helping spread the word that we need to not wait on fear. And I think that that is something that's really important. That's going to be really helpful. Like so many people are just waiting to see. I think you can make smart decisions that are good for you without putting your entire life on hold. I don't think that that's a good solution for anybody. Putting your life on hold is something that creates anxiety. Anxiety can lead to more fear. More fear can lead to irrational decisions. I don't see that being good for anyone, anybody in any industry, in any company. That is just not very helpful. So instead, I think just simply by spreading the message, I mean, we're going to be posting that message on LinkedIn and a variety of other places. So if you don't want to spread that message yourself necessarily, then just, you know, click and share some of our posts and we'll be happy to help you spearhead that. Aside from that, though, I think that I look at it from like, if I were in the recruiting industry, then I would probably be looking for new ways to do business. Just like every time there's a downturn, it sort of, in my mind, it speeds up the rate at which successful companies are going to innovate and successful organizations and successful people are going to innovate because they're forced to, partially just to stay alive, but at the same time, to create new opportunities and come out of either recessions or bad situations even stronger. It's a requirement, I think, at this point. So I would be looking at new ways to be able to make, to connect with candidates, maybe even partnerships. You know, something that I'll tell you has been a, we don't do it as much anymore, but was a successful strategy for us in the past, is going to where candidates are already hanging out that are the types of places where your exact candidate hangs out. And you probably already have some of those ideas anyways, but like maybe creating partnerships with those places that they're already hanging out to be able to send you candidates. You know, that's just one example off the top of my head. However, I think that there's lots of opportunity for creative capacity out there and you're going to be required to innovate is going to happen. So I don't know that that's a perfect answer to that, but I do know what the challenge is going to be. Hey, I managed to text a bunch of people and stay on a little bit longer here because I felt it was really important to try and answer a whole bunch of these questions. These are such great questions. And I don't know how much I can articulate how much I appreciate the trust that you're putting in us in looking to us for these types of answers. That's really humbling. And I feel a huge obligation to try and guide all of you and the many other people that are asking in a way that's really good for you in the short and long run as we go through some of these pretty challenging times. If we didn't answer your question, feel free to email us and we'll do our darndest to make sure that we can try and get you an answer in one way or another. Or by all means, you know, click on the link, schedule a call with Philip or our team and, you know, figure out how we can best support you in one way or another. And we'll be really transparent and really honest with you if for some reason we think we can't support you in your situation, but we'll always make a recommendation, whatever it looks like for you and what you need. And if there's anything else we can do for you, don't hesitate to reach out. This is what we do. It's what we love to do. And I honestly, if you would ask me 2 weeks ago, everything was getting canceled. My schedule is getting wiped clean. I'm like, oh, well, this means it's going to be a vacation. And we've just had so many people looking to us for answers that I just feel very obligated to continue to work way more than what I anticipated. And I feel really good about doing it. This is what we love to do. If you're already a client or student of ours, look tomorrow for some additional communications for ways that we are going to try to support you even more and help out in some of these challenging times. So thank you, all of you, for taking the time and investing in yourself and putting your trust in us. It means an awful lot. And I just really, really appreciate it. And it says a lot about you too. Thank you. We'll see you all later.